Welcome again to the Associate and Affiliate Cricket Podcast. Today we're going to talk about all things Ireland, and we have a couple of experts here to help. My normal co-host, Andrew Nixon. Welcome, Andrew.
Hi, Russ. Hi, Barry.
And Cricket Ireland media manager, Barry Chambers. Welcome, Barry.
Yeah, good morning, Russ. Good morning, Andrew.
We mentioned the Intercontinental Cup game. We mentioned briefly that the pitch was quite a road. What was the feedback on that match, and particularly the pitch?
The pitch to me wasn't really a cricket pitch. As you say, it's been mentioned a road, and that's very good description, because it really looked as if it was made of cement. I think if it had played for another 2 weeks on it, it wouldn't have broke up. You know, it offered absolutely no assistance to the quicker bowlers and the spinners. I mean, George Dockrell bowled something like 47, 50 overs, and he said himself he only got one ball to turn, and that was out of the rough created by Trent Johnson. So, very good for the batsmen and very good for the averages, but as far as a cricket wicket goes, I don't think very conducive to getting spectators under the ground.
Yeah, they did play the same wicket for the WCL matches, and it didn't even seem to break up after 6 days of cricket, really, did it? Or barely had a mark on it.
No. As I say, a road was a perfect description, because, I mean, the fast bowlers, you know, running through in it, you would have thought there had been some signs, but it was just so incredibly hard. I mean, I went out and had a look at the groundsman repairing the pitch, and they were actually putting little bits of cement, sort of like pellets of cement on it, on a length, and then just, they would flood the square, and then just roll and roll. And, I mean, it just, as I say, it just looked as if somebody was plastering or cementing on top of it, just giving it a sheen. And not if I was living in the UAE, I definitely want to be a batsman.
This is a typical pitch then for them? Like, it wasn't just a deliberate tactic to try and get a draw?
Yeah, I think that's what it is. I mean, they've got no seamers in. They've got one guy, Cameron Shazad, I think he's called, bowled sort of 4 or 5 overs, and tried to get the ball to reverse later on. But they have 7 spinners in their ranks, so they don't want anything with a bit of pace on it. I think the other thing is the way their batsmen play. They're very subcontinental. They tend to plant their legs sort of middle stump and look to whip the ball through mid-wicket and mid-on. So any sort of movement, they get in trouble. Definitely. I mean, it's not just for Ireland. They've done it to Scotland, and it's proved very successful for them. And, you know, that's what I would do. I mean, they've got to play to their strengths, which is slow, low pitches with little seam movement. And, you know, they're definitely taking advantage of home conditions. But, I mean, if they were to come to Ireland, we would produce a green seaming track. And, you know, what's the difference?
Yeah. With any particular performances that stood out from that game on either side?
I'll try and look at the bowlers, because batting was just so easy. All the guys made runs. But on the bowling side, I thought Trent Johnson bowled well at times. Tim Murdoch impressed me. I mean, he made a bit of a nervous start to his Irish career, I thought. But it showed just how clever a bowler he is in not very conducive conditions. He moved the ball, trying to set up the LBW and that. So I was impressed, probably Tim Murdoch and Trent Johnson. All the batsmen got runs, but as I say, probably us three would have scored runs. It was so easy on that pitch.
Probably not much more to say on that game then, I guess. Let's move on to the WCL Championship game. First match, Irish bowling made early inroads, but the UAE managed to get 165. But it got a little bit tight for a while. They were 4 for 51 before Gary Wilson got going.
Yeah, it was very nervous. I don't think I saw the top four feel. In such poor shot selection, and it was a comical sort of schoolboy run out mix up between Niall O'Brien and Gary Wilson as well. So I must admit that there was a few nerves on my part. But one thing the Irish have, I mean, they've got depth to their batting, and not only depth, but they've got a lot of experience in that middle and late order. I mean, I think out of the team that played, there's 8 of them have played more than 100 times for Ireland, sort of average age 29, 30. So there was no panic, and they did exactly, plenty of overs. So Gary Wilson and Kevin O'Brien, first of all, just, you know, took no risk cricket. I mean, they just played the ball for the singles and got the occasional boundary. And then John Mooney, he came in. I mean, they'd done it against England. John Mooney, he was there at the end. So no real nerves in the final stages. Became very comfortable as the UAE heads dropped. I think I should point out, I mean, UAE have some very talented players, but to me, the huge difference in the two teams was the fielding on both sides. Whereas Ireland probably saved 20 or 30 runs in that UAE total of 165. The UAE's ground fielding was, I mean, I don't like using the word, but it was practically abysmal. It was like a club side, and they probably gave away 30 runs. So the fielders didn't really back up the bowlers in this, and that helped Ireland, no doubt.
Yeah, Ireland, obviously, they've been a very good fielding side, even by test standards, for a while now. And is that just experience, or is it something to do with the professionalism and the coaching and that kind of stuff?
I think the latter. It's the setup of Ireland. I mean, we used to be jealous when England came. I remember in 2006, we were getting a team photograph done, our squad photograph done, and the backroom staff outnumbered the team. There was something like 28 in the photograph, 12 or 13 players in the first team. And we asked, well, what do the other guys do? What do they know? They said, oh, that's our strength and conditioning coach, that's our fielding coach, that's our throwing coach, that's our bowling coach. And we all laughed at it, but Ireland's actually getting quite close to that now. They have had a fielding coach, a guy, Will Linton, in the past, who's brought them throwing techniques. And now they've got Brenton Connerson as a strength and conditioning. And they've also got a physio, and, you know, obviously Pete Johnson, the video analyst, Phil Simmons, the coach. So they're building up quite a backroom staff and quite a very good experience. And it obviously helps. I mean, the other thing I mentioned will be that Ireland's field placing, I thought, was fantastic, you know, and that's because now, obviously, with the video analyst and the coach looking, coming up with plans, you know, they know who these guys are. They were caught out a bit, I think, by the spinner, Nazir Aziz. I don't think they had much footage in him, so he troubled them a bit in the first game, but they had him worked out for the second game, and that's what the other associate countries, you know, have got to come up with now. You know, it's difficult for them to surprise Ireland.
Yeah, that kind of thing, I mean, because it's obviously quite difficult to get any sort of footage in the associate countries. So actually getting that knowledge in the first place must be quite a task for that setup.
Yeah, I think there's quite a, you know, we've played against these countries now quite a lot. So, you know, over the past maybe 6-7 years, there's not many that we haven't played against. You know, we've played the T20 tournaments. And I think there's quite a bit of sharing goes on. I know Scotland and Afghanistan obviously played against the UAE, so I'm sure Pete's been in touch with the Scottish counterpart, and obviously they've swapped information on that. So, yeah, it might be obviously more difficult than some of the more established countries, but there is footage out there, and if there is, Ireland tend to get a hold of it.
In the second game, the UAE again batted, they made 196, a slightly easier chase, you'd probably say.
Yeah, I mean, that game for me was all about Trent Johnson. I mean, they actually switched pitches in this one. They moved two over, and there was a wee bit more in it for the bowlers in the first sort of 5-10 overs, but it was actually easier for the batsmen because the ball was coming on a bit more, so probably par for that game was maybe 230. Trent Johnson was absolutely superb. He took 4 wickets, moved on to third place in the all-time aggregate list for wicket takers for Ireland. Just quite superb, and got rid of their two danger men who were looking well set and looking as if they would put the UAE through to 230 or 250, which would have been a much more difficult chase. But again, Ireland this time, you know, they learned Phil Simmons, the coach, had been a bit critical of them, and the, you know, the lack of professionalism maybe in the first run chase. No such problems this time. I mean, the words bandied about were just clinical, professional, disciplined. Just never really give the UAE a sniff of a chance, and just an example, a perfect example of how they chased down a total. And I mean, I was very relaxed for the whole way through it, to be honest. But in the first game, I was a wee bit worried for maybe 15 overs or so. The second game, the result for me was never in doubt.
Trent Johnson's an interesting player to talk about because he's obviously advanced in age. Is there any plans for when he retires?
No, we asked him, the media asked him after the game, you know, we were sort of, he's been threatening retirement now for a while. He had planned initially, I saw a report where he was going to retire after the last T20 World Cup in Sri Lanka, but he's just been given a year's contract for Cricket Ireland. We asked him, you know, any chance of him making 2015 in Australia? He turns 39 now in April. He himself says, no chance of that. But, I mean, he's going better than ever. He looks fitter than ever. He's training full-time now. He's been given a professional contract with Cricket Ireland. So as long as he keeps taking wickets, you know, I'd say it's obviously he's going to be nearly 41 by the time the World Cup, and that might be a bridge too far for him. But, you know, as long as he keeps going, ahead of him, might be the first name on my team sheet every time. I think he's just been a superb performer for Ireland since he made his debut in 2004 and a great asset for us.
Are there young Poles coming through behind? You've obviously lost Boyd Rankin.
So it's difficult because the seniors, there are an awful, there's a guy called Peter Chase who's plays with Malahide and has been in the Ireland under 19 ranks. You know, I know he's highly rated. Shane Gedgett's just joined the MCC Young Cricketers. He's out in the United Arab Emirates as well at the minute. So these guys have got a chance. Stuart Thompson, who's been in the senior squad for that T20 in Sri Lanka, he's sort of more medium pace. You know, the Irish wickets don't tend to, generate. We don't tend to generate real out-and-out pace bowlers. I think Boyd Rankin was a bit unique. It's going to be difficult to replace a man, Trent Johnson, but there are a few, but for these, there's new interprovincial set up coming up starting now next month in Ireland, so that'll give a chance for the guys maybe at Ireland A at club level to stake a claim, and we're hoping maybe one or two emerge from that tournament. There's never been a better chance now to play for Ireland with the amount of games coming up and fantastic opportunities. I mean, they've got a World Cup now to aim for, and that's a great incentive for anyone.
Any other comments on those matches before we move on to that provincial competition?
No, it's just, it was just a fantastic tour. I mean, it's just everything seemed to go for Ireland. You know, everything was so professional, just the way they set up the training camp beforehand. I thought the preparations were first class. They did come in for a little bit of criticism for not maybe trying to push a win in the four-day game, but the main focus of the trip were the two World Cup qualifiers, and that was always a big prize. Anything else was just really incidental, and although it may have appeared a bit negative, I think it was just, you know, perfect for the way the tour had set up.
We thought last week when we mentioned that they probably didn't want to tie their bowlers out by giving them another go on a pitch that probably wasn't going to give them much on that fourth day in the decision to bat on.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, as I say, the two seamers had bowled, you know, a lot of overs. Trent, I mean, they're trying to protect him. He's got two dodgy knees. He's had an operation on one in the past. So with the two World Cup games coming up, they just didn't want to take a chance. George Dockrell bowled nearly 50 overs. Kevin O'Brien had a bit of a side strain. So plus, they didn't want the UAE batsmen, I think, getting used to the Irish bowlers either. You know, they wanted to keep a wee bit up their sleeves. Although, as it turned out, it was more or less, I think there was five or six of the UAE team changed for the one-day game. So maybe that wasn't such an argument as the better reason, I think you're quite right, was the fact that they just wanted to keep the guys fresh for the two World Cup games.
Let's move on to Irish cricket in the upcoming season, which I'm not sure, you've gone back to the snow there, so it might be delayed, hopefully. But a lot of our listeners might not be quite aware of how Irish cricket is structured. So what's the current structure and what are they moving towards with these inter-provincial games?
Well, the current structure is, I mean, cricket in Ireland's based around four major cities, four provinces. So you've got the Northern Cricket Union in Belfast, where I'm from, Derry, the Northwest Cricket Union, which encompasses Tyrone, where Boyd Rankin and William Poorfield down to cricket. The main interest, obviously, and where we've seen growth is around the Dublin area, the Leinster cricket region. I mean, that's seen a huge, since 2007, a huge growth. There's also around Cork, the Munster Cricket Union. And in the last couple of seasons, as well as, I suppose I forgot to mention that there when I was setting it up, was the Connacht Cricket Union and around Galway, Limerick, and the president of that is actually Owen Morgan's father, Jody Morgan. So they've only started up, so they're a bit of a fledgling organisation. But again, it's great opportunities for, you know, new cricketers. I mean, it's regions where cricket hasn't been played so much in the past. So I know Cricket Ireland, they're putting a lot of work into the Munster and Connacht regions. So that's the main unions. This year's a little bit exciting in the fact that they're setting up with a help from ICC TAP funding that they've given money, and they're setting up an inter-regional competition now. At the moment, it's only the three main regions of the Northwest, Leinster, and the NCU are going to be playing each other in the three formats of the game. There's a three-day competition, and there's obviously the 50-over, and there's also a T20 competition going on. So they just feel that the Cricket Ireland feel at the moment that there's too much of a gap between club cricket and international cricket, and this gives people a perfect platform to state their case for inclusion in the teams. the A-team program will still be going on. And I know there are plans, so they have been talking to their Scottish and Dutch counterparts that maybe about the formation of a European league. So there is work going on. I think this year will be a pretty exciting one for the young club cricketer who in the past may have felt that international cricket was out of his reach.
What would be the structure of those games? Will they expect the national players who are based in England, the county players, to come back for them?
Well, I don't think so, no. I think what's happened last year, they played a North-East-South game, and the main guy at the counties, what happened was if they were available, a few of them, I know Niall O'Brien came over, he wanted to get some keeping, and also Tim Murdoch flew in for one of the games. So, but I think it'll be mostly the Irish-based players, maybe with one or two of the county guys, if they have time off or if they're not featuring in the first 11, then they'll come over, but it won't be mandatory for the county guys to play. We've also talked about for the T20, allowing each region they maybe have two overseas players now, whether they go for locally based professionals here or maybe they fly in a high profile name, that's still to be seen. But no, I don't think that, to get back to your original point, I don't think that many of the county guys will play in every game, but they may make the occasional appearance.
In the past, when the interprovincials have been played in the past, it's often been struggles to get a sort of best team playing. Is there hope that the best players will always be available for these matches?
Yeah, well, the difference this time, Andrew, is that the players are going to be paid. With the funding, they'll be getting a match fee and expenses. Plus, I think each region this time seems to be really behind the idea. In the past, as you say, there was a lot of availability problems. But this time, they've actually restructured all the teams in the main Premier Leagues here in Ireland. They're now 98 teams. It used to be 10 teams with a lot of fixtures and players, obviously, getting a bit tired. But this year, there's only going to be 8 teams. Plus the fact that the players will be getting paid as a big bonus for them. And the fact, I think, that, you know, with an Ireland place at stake, a lot of them will be looking to push their claims. So for those reasons, I think it will be, there won't be any problems as far as player availability is concerned.
In the long term, would they like the county players to come back in?
Well, I think, I'm a little bit skeptical, but I think, you know, Ireland's looking to play Test cricket by 2020. If we do get to that stage, then I would see a sort of, you know, the Ireland in the main league, you know, maybe have 4 or 5 regions playing, maybe 6, and looking for the Irish players to be based here rather than the counties, you know, to make it attractive enough. If we were playing Test cricket, then that's obviously got to be the aim. They have to keep our best players here in Ireland rather than playing in England.
Against that, I would guess that in general, the English county competition is going to be better, and because of the pure size of England. So would that actually help the Irish game if that did come about? Or is this kind of a...
Yeah, well, I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, Ireland have been helped by the fact, I mean, why they're so strong at the moment is the fact that the guys have experience of English county cricket, which is far and away, you know, the best standard available anywhere in these parts. You know, our top 5 of all county experience, and that shows through. I mean, I think 8 or 9 of the team have played first class cricket, so that's obviously got to help now. As you know, the standard at the moment here, you know, people laugh when you think about, you know, Ireland sort of having a first class setup or whatever, but you've got to understand that, you know, maybe as little as 10 years ago, people laugh when you talk about Irish cricket, but it's, you know, come on, the growth on it the last 5 or 6 years has been, you know, huge. So who's not to say that as more and more people start playing the game, I know participation numbers through the roof, you know, whatever it was, as low as 14,000 playing the game in 2006 or 2007. I think the last census they did has put it up to 30,000. They're looking at 50,000 in the next couple of years. So, especially I think round as Connacht and Munster, where they're not, no players have emerged yet. That's big hurling and GAA country. And, you know, the similar ball skills and those sports are, you know, well suited to cricket. So I think we could get another few when Morgan's Red Joyce is emerging from those. And, you know, having a game where you can make a career out of it. I mean, the GAA is essentially amateur. So if it came to a choice between, you know, playing for your county for very little or suddenly if cricket offered you a chance of a job, then, you know, we may get better players from that. So that's what we're hoping anyway.
is there any plans to eventually bring in Munster and maybe Connacht to the interprovincial tournament, maybe start with just in the 2020?
I think that would be an excellent idea. I was a wee bit surprised when they didn't actually do it this year. I would have gone, I would have been at a 14 tournament, a combined Munster and Connacht with the help of maybe a few players who weren't in the other squads and maybe a few overseas players. I know Graham Smith, the South African captain, has been down in Munster, I think, last year. Obviously, he's married to a local girl from there, so I think he wants to help out Munster cricket. And I think maybe if, you know, if the timing suited, or maybe eventually when he retires in a few years, if he could be, you know, involved in Munster cricket, I think that'd be a huge boost for the area. I think, as you say, they'll initially they'll bring them into a T20 competition, then maybe the 50 overs, and eventually the 3-day game. But, you know, there's a lot of work going on, and I think they felt at the minute, look, the cricket here is just not strong enough, and if we bring them in with these other teams, then it could just, you know, be counterproductive and affect that if they keep getting beat heavily, it might set them back. But, no, I think, as I said earlier, I think it will be a big growth area in years to come.
Yeah, with this, the growth area, obviously you need to get a certain amount of media attention, and what's your take on how that's improved over the, I guess, since about 2007, when after the World Cup, probably the real starting point for Irish cricket.
Yeah, well, I'm a wee bit prejudiced here. I think it's grown out of all recognition. And we went down to meet the President of Ireland just before we left for the 2007 World Cup, and I was getting a taxi out to Aras and Uachtaráin, and to meet Mary McAleese, and the taxi driver said, oh, Ireland cricket, and I didn't even know we had a team. Yet, obviously, yesterday when I was coming through immigration at Dublin Airport, the guy checking my passport was able to tell me everything, the results against the UAE, what it meant in terms of World Cup qualification, how we'd done in the T20, knew all about our best players, was able to just ask the question he asked about Boyd Rankin, you know, who's going to replace Boyd Rankin. So I think in the public consciousness, it's definitely, you know, it's out there now in the last 5 or 6 years. Andrew Leonard, the marketing manager of Cricket Ireland, has done a fantastic job, obviously, with the new social media, Twitter and Facebook. You know, Ireland's hugely popular in those, you know, and the development officer's doing a lot of work getting into the schools. I'd like a wee bit more coverage, obviously, in some of the newspapers. Still, it's a bit of a battle, and a huge one for us would be getting a national broadcaster, RTE, to start showing some of the games. We have a contract with Sky. But, I mean, cricket and RT used to be shown in the 70s, believe it or not. You know, used to show games against the counties. But apart from a few highlights last year in the 2020 qualifiers, it's been a real battle to get them interested. RT Radio, John Kenny's been very good there, so he gives a lot of coverage to the game. But it's still, we're finding it very difficult to get on television with RT.
A lot of the domestic comps, I know the county cricket made an announcement about this last week, and the Sheffield Shield has been streamed online. Is that something that Ireland is likely to look at, particularly these interprovincial games?
Yeah, that's a possibility. There's the games, obviously, ICC streamed the games against the UAE last week, so the technology is there and has been for a few years. It's just getting people interested. I know we've streamed the games in the past. KBTV have come over and did, I think, the Canada games for us. So it'll be interesting to see. I know we play Pakistan now in 2 ODIs in May. I know there's talks going on to try and get those games televised. If they don't come off, then maybe live streaming will be the way to go. Domestic cricket, yeah, it could be the interprovincials, maybe the final day of the T20, or, you know, some of the high profile games. If we can get someone interested in that, it's obviously making it financially feasible for a lot of the countries, but maybe an element of the funding could go to that, to live streaming. I think it'd be a great initiative. I know a lot of people watched the live stream last week, so they are very popular as broadband speeds and whatever increase and the technology improves.
Yeah. What was the feedback on that live stream? Were there any numbers that came out on how many people actually did watch worldwide, and particularly in Ireland?
No, I haven't seen any, but I was speaking to a few of the people from ICC, and they were saying, you know, it was obviously more popular than anticipated, because they were having a lot of problems coping with demand. I mean, unless you had got a high-speed link, I think there's a lot of buffering. But no, they seemed, any feedback I've seen, people seemed very happy with it. There were a few commentary problems maybe on the first game. Brian Murgatroyd wasn't available. But apart from that, you know, we thought the picture quality was pretty good and the camera work excellent. So I haven't seen numbers yet, but I know, as I say, from talking to a few of the ACC people, that they seemed very pleased by the reaction, or the positive reaction. Even from Andrew, who'd been one of their maybe critics in the past. I mean, I have to say it was a fantastic initiative and one that everyone's very thankful for. The Associate Word, I mean, we don't get much of a chance to watch these teams in action, and it was a great boost. I watched the two Scotland-Afghanistan games a few weeks ago, and just was fantastic. I thought being able to sit in Ireland and watch cricket from Sharjah and Associate Cricket at that, and I hope many more such games are shown.
It's certainly a boon for what we're trying to achieve here in the sense that we're actually able to see matches instead of relying exclusively on people who are there. And my personal opinion was that the coverage was pretty good. The streaming was certainly decent. The picture quality was excellent. And yeah, as I said, the commentary was sometimes, I think when Brian Murray was there, he was also very good. So, and not at all, sometimes it does come across in a commentary on Associate games, not at all demeaning or of it, which is great to actually have it taken seriously as a match as opposed to kind of a novelty item and sometimes get the World Cup.
Yeah, I mean, Brian's an exceptional broadcaster and a very experienced one. He's had a lot of hats in his time. He's been Australian media manager, he's been East England media manager, he's worked in the media department of ICC, so Through all those years, he's very knowledgeable. To be fair to him, he did a lot of research sometimes on these games. I'll not mention any names of the Sky guys who came over to do matches in Ireland and didn't want anything to know in the past about Irish cricket. You know, I offered to give him a bit of, you know, a bit of background and individual players and that, and just didn't want to know. Whereas Brian was very keen to, you know, find out about all the players. And obviously, I did a lot of homework on them. He got his match notes and files there on both teams and past matches and that. So, yeah, look, he's a guy who did his homework and showed in his commentary. Very knowledgeable and very experienced and, you know, not at all demeaning about Associate Cricket, very positive.
Yeah, and actually one of the other things I thought was good about the coverage is that they actually got interviews with various people across all the days. I'm not sure how often they can continue to kind of cross these topics, but it certainly made for a more interesting coverage than, for instance, a normal international.
That's right. I mean, in the second match, I was taking photographs just to the left of where they were broadcasting, and I saw Arthur Vincent was on, Ed Van Europe, the Dutch manager, was on. They obviously got, Eddie Fitzgibbon from ICC, but it breaks up, and it's a long day, commentating maybe 6-7 hours, so I'm sure Brian was only too glad to have a few guests along and take the workload of them, and as you say, give different perspectives and different opinions. On not just only the match, but on Associate Cricket and World Cricket in general.
Just have a look ahead to the Ireland's international season coming up. It's quite a busy year for Ireland.
Yeah, as I said, we've got those two World Internationals against Pakistan in May, and it might be a slightly different pitch they played on in the UAE and a slightly different prospect. I mean, Pakistan look to be bowling very well at the minute. The big games for us are obviously the World Cup qualifiers, I Cup against the Dutch and Scotland. At the minute, we're negotiating with Bangladesh. They're trying to fit in with their schedule and our schedule to get a three-match series, whether that be T20 or our preferences for ODIs, maybe a mix. I mean, at the minute, it's tentatively looks like sort of mid-August, but that could change to late August, as I say. There's a lot of work going on behind the scenes there. And of course, then at the end of the year, we'll have another T20 World Cup qualifiers that's scheduled into the UAE again. Looks like mid-November at the minute, and hopefully an I Cup final as well. So, yeah, look, a lot of cricket at the top level, but the whole way through, I mean, the A team's got a lot of fixtures. There's these inter-pros. The women's teams are hosting the World Cup qualifiers in Dublin in late July, early August. So, very busy season at all levels. Of course, I should mention there's another possibility. The under-19s are involved in a World Cup qualifier as well. So, look, a very busy season, a very packed schedule, and hopefully I'm hoping that's a very successful one for Ireland. I mean, we've got to keep winning these competitions, not just win, but dominate. I mean, that's the task. Now, Ireland's just not looking to qualify for the World Cup, but they win by a considerable margin. They send out a message to ICC and the full members, look, we're too good at this level. We want more matches, and we want a higher status.
Yeah, and you've got the 4-day game against Australia A. How important are these games for Ireland's development?
Yeah, well, we don't get much of a chance. I mean, that's a fantastic fixture. It looked as if one stage Ricky Ponting was going to be coming over before he retired, so we were getting very excited about that. The South Africa came over last year, and the tour was dreadful from a Welsh point of view, so they got hampered. But the standard of cricket there, the South Africa compared to some of the games, but they've since gone on and are featuring in their test side and one day international side. So the Australians are using it. They want to put, the best pitch in Ireland. They're looking for Ashes preparation. They're going to be taking it very seriously. Their guys are obviously going to want to feature in that. So I think it'll be very high intensity of cricket that they'll play, and it'll be a good opposition. I just hope that we get as strong a team out as possible, and we're not playing them with our A team. I mean, that could be a bit embarrassing. But on the flip side, I mean, that's how James Shannon got on. I mean, he's the guy who emerged last year from those games against South Africa. So a great opportunity for, some of the fringe players to state a case for inclusion in the full team.
Now, looking at the county schedule around that time, there's only a one-day match for the teams, for the counties at the time. So hopefully the counties will release the players if they're only missing one-day match.
Yeah, I mean, I know Richard Holdsworth does a lot of work, and he's sort of the point contact man for Cricket Ireland. He's with the counties. He's our high performer, national performance director, the most correct title. I know there's a lot of work goes on there with the counties, and that's one of the problems with our fixtures. Just trying to fit all the pieces of the jigsaw together. We'll probably get the guys now at 5-6 different counties, and trying to get them all, what works best. So there's a bit of give and take there, and to be fair to the counties, for the most part, they've been excellent to us. We've had a few high-profile occasions in the past where it hasn't been so, but in recent years it's improved considerably.
Is that to an extent because Ireland cricket is becoming larger, they're taking it more seriously, as in they look at it as an international they're releasing players for, rather than a kind of, lowly game?
Yeah, well, to be fair to the ICC too, I mean, there's some mandatory clause now then that if we request release for one day internationals and games against full member sides, they have to release it. In the past, we were going and saying, please, can you, would you be so kind? Now it's a case of if we want them for games against full members, they have to release it. So, but as I said, look, there is a bit of give and take, and if that county had, say, maybe a cup final or a huge match, we would look favourably and say, look, if you do this now, then we'll do your favour somewhere along the lines, and that seems to be working well.
What's the where Ireland is going with their test status application now? Where do you see that as being, and what do they need to do? Obviously, these A games are particularly important because they're one of the things that they would be measured against in terms of their performance in those.
Yeah, look, I mean, like I said, they're looking for 2020, so that's 7 years away. I mean, it's easy for me and it's easy for the players. You just got to keep winning, and not only one, but one well. And just hopefully just keep knocking on the door and eventually it will open. We had talked about a glass ceiling, I just think, just keep winning, keep doing what we're doing, keep getting those high profile wins, the ones in the World Cups, against Pakistan, Bangladesh, England especially, need more of those results. I just noticed an article by Ian Calder today, stating the fact that, in 6-7 years since 2007, we've only had, I think, 17 or 19 games against full members. That's averaging 2-3 a year. That's not enough. We need a lot more. William Porterfield saying, look, we need more games. We can only get better if we play more games. Even against the Zimbabwe's, Bangladesh's, you can only be playing these guys more and more often. Will the team improve? And, I think it's not too much to ask for maybe in Ireland's looking somewhere, but looking for 10 ODIs a year, well, that would be a start. Just need more high-profile fixtures to get better.
I guess the worry for Ireland must be that even if they got test status, they might end up kind of where Bangladesh is in Zimbabwe, that no one really wants to play them because they're not quite at that level and the market isn't huge, so they're not going to make profit on it.
Yeah, well, the only thing this would be the as I don't know the exact figure, but somewhere between $10 and $15 million better off. And, you know, at the moment, that sort of $10-15 million could make a huge difference to Irish cricket if that was translated into development officers, a youth academies in the pipeline, you know, youth academies at each of the regions. That would make a huge difference to cricket throughout Ireland. And I think, you know, give us that sort of investment and I think we will produce players and teams good enough. As you say, look, it might be difficult if they persuade your Englands and your, you know, your Indias to come here, but the fact that we're, you know, our climate and our summer and we're not too far from England, you know, maybe they would send some sort of a team for, you know, ahead of a warm-up game. As they say, South Africa was here last year before they came to England. Australia's coming this year. You know, they could use Ireland as a base before they go and play their series in England. Surely, you know, a few weeks, play a test match, play a couple of T20s, a couple of ODIs. Perfect preparation as far as before going to England's concerned. So we're lucky in that respect.
Yeah, and I guess certainly from Australia's point of view, it would definitely suit them to be playing someone who's going to take a game really seriously as opposed to kind of a county second 11 or just rolled out a team.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously going to be a better standard, as you say. I mean, it used to be a big thing for the counties playing the tour and sides, and they used to take it very seriously. But I think in the last year or so, as you say, they've featured a lot of academy players and second 11 players. So I don't know if it provides the sort of intensity and competitive action that Australia or other test countries will be looking for, which they would get in Ireland, you know, for sure. And I'm sure the conditions here too, the wickets tend to be a bit more sporting for bowlers, so it'd be a good test for their batsmen coming to Ireland. And, you know, as Ireland gets stronger and stronger, you know, it's going to be a very competitive game and give them a real good workout, which I'm sure is exactly what they'll be looking for.
What's the feeling in Ireland as well about, if they do get test status, how they'll end up in relating to Scotland and the Netherlands and other nations like that?
I don't know. I mean, I'm pretty selfish. I mean, to be honest with you, most of the associates, I don't know, we've got to be selfish and think of ourselves. You know, just keep winning. I mean, Scotland, when they were on top, you know, probably when they won that ICC trophy in 2005, you know, they had a very good team. I think they've slipped badly in recent years. I don't know how they'll improve with these county guys. Holland, I mean, yeah, not bad, but I think the big threat from watching a lot of cricket that I've got to put my hands up, but I was wrong here because Afghanistan to me is the big country emerging. I think they've got a lot of potential. I see where they've just signed a deal with Pakistan to improve their cricket. I mean, they've matured. I saw them in between 2008 and 2010. And over the last decade, if you'd have said that they were going to be a major power because they were just so raw. But definitely, with Kabir Khan on board, their cricket's improved beyond all recognition. They've matured. They're a very, very good side now, and they've got all bases covered. They can play in all conditions. They've got their bowling attacks varied, and it's got depth. They seem to produce new batsmen all the time. And I think they'll be the big threat. I think Scotland and maybe the Netherlands have missed out on their chance of pushing. I think for the minute, it's Ireland just ahead of Afghanistan, and if anyone's going to get full member status, it's going to be those two in the next 10 years.
I guess my query was also, like, would you expect Ireland to continue to play Scotland if they had full member status? Obviously, they'd have a fixture list, but how would you see that playing out?
I could laugh and say we'd send our A team over, but that wouldn't be fair. Of course, look, Scotland have been our traditional rivals now for 120, 130 years or whatever. You know, it used to be probably one of the only two or three fixtures we had a year. So, look, now we'd continue to play Scotland as often as we could, as well as Holland and others. I mean, I would see maybe, you know, the fact that they were coming to get them and they maybe have a tri-series or a quadrangular series. We had one here in 2000, I'm not sure it was 2007 or 8, when the West Indies came over and the Dutch and Scotland both came and we played against each other. So you would want to try and help out, I would think, you know, plus the fact that shares cost. So I could see sort of more of those tri-series, quadrangular series being played. I guess that would be the way to go.
Thanks, Barry.
No problem. Thank you. And thanks again for your for your coverage and your interest in Irish cricket and associate cricket. You are doing a great job. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Andrew, we have some other stuff to talk about. So let's start with the Intercontinental Cup game between Kenya and Canada. It was a 4-wicket win for Kenya, but a fairly closely fought match. Nitish Kumar made 89 in the first innings to get Canada to 358. And then for Kenya, another young player, Rakib Patel, made 130 to take first innings points. But in the second innings, Canada needed more support because Hiral Patel made 89 and he took 4 for 41, but there was actually not a lot there for them.
It's to use a cliche, it was very much a game of two halves. You had the first innings were both sort of quite high scoring, and then the second innings were for both teams. Kenya lost 6 wickets in their run chase, were quite low scoring. It was almost like they were playing on a different pitch for the second innings. Yeah, in general, Kenya by far the better team. It was good to see Nitish Kumar, finally show some of the sort of promise he has. With 89, he was probably unlucky not to get a maiden first class century. And again, Hiral Patel scoring 89, I think we said. So he did well as well, but yeah, in the end, I think Kenya were the better team. It's put Canada in quite an unfortunate position in the Intercontinental Cup table. I think they're now firmly rooted to the bottom. They're on 10 points, and the Netherlands are 20 points ahead, rather, and with a game in hand as well. So it's looking like Canada are going to be finishing bottom of the Intercontinental Cup now, unless they can turn it around against the UAE and the Netherlands later in the year.
Yeah, Kenya's really put themselves back into contention in the Intercontinental Cup. For now, they're 22 points behind Afghanistan, but with 2 games to go, I think they play them as well. So they're an outside chance of making the final, which is a good. And again, same with the WCL games, they're actually well placed. So it was a good tour of the UAE for them.
Yeah, absolutely. They lost the 2 2020s, but in general, a very successful tour.
So move on. News. Barry mentioned it offhand, but Afghanistan has signed a deal with Pakistan Cricket to get general support, amongst other things. That's a great thing for them, obviously.
Oh, absolutely. I've often been a proponent of these sort of partnerships, either with the sort of four-member board themselves or with domestic teams. So in England, I know Guernsey have a partnership with Sussex, and France have a partnership with Kent. And these partnerships can only benefit the non-test sides. I'm hoping that, as well as logistical support and development support, there's also the possibility of games, which more games between Pakistan and Afghanistan. They played an ODI in Sharjah, I think, last year or the year before, and hopefully we can see more of those games. Possibly Afghanistan participating in Pakistan domestic cricket, and the had a team in the 2020 a couple of years ago. Hopefully they can put another team there and maybe even play in Pakistan's 4-day competition. So I think this is a good news for Afghanistan.
They're probably one of the better full members to have a partnership with as well, because Pakistan obviously struggles to get players, teams across to Pakistan and to organise fixtures. So Afghanistan's being a near neighbour is able to fill a gap that exists in Pakistan's schedule. So hopefully it works for both sides, I guess.
And if any team is going to play against Pakistan in Pakistan, it will be Afghanistan at the moment. They've toured in the last couple of years and played against the A side of Pakistan and a couple of domestic teams. And if Pakistan wants to bring an ODI to Pakistan, I think Afghanistan would be the ideal opponent for them. Afghanistan wouldn't have any problems playing in Pakistan, as they've shown in the last few years.
We'll stay on Afghanistan because we need to preview some upcoming tournaments, and the Asian Cricket Council's T20 qualifier is starting, I think, in 3 days.
Yep.
This is it's a slightly strange qualifier because both the United Arab Emirates as the host and Afghanistan as one of the high finishes in the last qualifiers have pre-qualified, and they're both in Group B. The top two will go through. Group A has Nepal, Malaysia, Hong Kong, Maldives, and Singapore, and Group B has the UAE, Afghanistan, Oman, Kuwait, and Bahrain. I guess if UAE and Afghanistan play to form, they'll probably make the final. So the two top teams in Group A will go straight through, which will be a bit odd. Let's start with Group A. I guess Nepal and Hong Kong will be the favourites there.
Yeah, although Malaysia certainly can't be counted out. They came very close to beating Nepal, Hong Kong and Afghanistan in the ACC Trophy a couple of years ago. And they on their day, they are capable of causing some upsets. Seem to still miss Aral Sapaya, obviously the Somerset player. He last played for them 6 years ago now. If Aral Sapaya could come back to Malaysia, that could just give them the edge they need. Although his county commitments are obviously preventing that. So it's probably the least predictable of the qualifiers we've had so far. Certainly the Americas, East Asia, Pacific and Africa one, you could pick the teams that were going to go through beforehand. And this one, it's a little more difficult. And in Group B, you know, UAE and Afghanistan should qualify, but Oman can often have a good day, especially in 2020 format. They got to the final of this tournament in 2007, I think, and tied with Afghanistan. So there's a possibility of things not quite going to form here. But yeah, Nepal and Hong Kong are probably the favourites to qualify for that global qualifier later in the year.
Yeah, I don't think we could count out either Kuwait or Singapore either. I think Singapore ended up above Malaysia in their last WCL tournament. They did together would have been four. And they were in a strange situation. They missed the last one because they'd been relegated.
Yeah.
But which just shows you how competitive this is, that a team of Singapore standing can be relegated from the tournament and then have to spend a year actually coming back forward. So they would definitely be an outside threat. And Kuwait has their moments as well. And to the extent that, in fact, that obviously in the last time this tournament was run, the UAE did this qualifying. It is, I guess, a little bit strange to see them qualify as hosts, and I think possibly a little bit unfair.
Yeah, I think I said to someone recently that there's no problem with the hosts qualifying by right as long as the host of the tournament is rotated. And it seems that this tournament is played in the UAE every single time now. It was in Ireland in 2008, and then every tournament since then has been in the UAE. So if they were giving the global qualifier to other countries, then I wouldn't have any problem with the hosts qualifying. But if it's going to be in the UAE every time, it's definitely unfair.
The other tournament that's coming up soon and would be the World Cricket League 7, which is in Botswana. On the 6th of April it starts. Fiji, Nigeria, the host Botswana, Germany, Vanuatu and Ghana. Any thoughts? Who'll go through?
It's a hard pick. I don't know too much about some of these teams. Botswana on home turf. You've got to look at them. The host side tends to get promoted from these WCL tournaments. Samoa missed out in Division 8 earlier in the year, of course, but so you can't count that up. Fiji are a good side. Nigeria, coming off the African qualifier, they didn't do too well. I believe they're now picking their UK-based players, so hopefully that will strengthen their team. Vanuatu can't be discounted either. It's quite a close tournament. Germany have a good side as well, so I'm quite looking forward to this.
I totally agree. I mean, I think this is one, actually, that almost any of the teams could probably get through. I would guess Fiji is probably, if I was going to pick anyone, they would probably be the favourites, and then maybe Germany or Nigeria. But Ghana, they're quite competent. They failed to get into the African first division of the T20, but not by a huge margin. And they've had some decent results of late. So, yeah, it should be a really fascinating thing. Hopefully we can get some decent coverage in Africa, so you never quite know.
Yeah. Fortunately, I think the Global Development Office will be in charge of the media coverage of this tournament rather than the Regional Development Office. So hopefully we'll get some better coverage than we had of the African 2020 qualifier.
And that will wrap it up. Thanks again, Andy.
Yep, no problem.
All right, thanks everyone.